You're listening to Hey Bitches Podcast, episode 96. You guys, I am so excited to sit down and have this episode. You guys know if you listen to me on Clubhouse when we have any of our creator chats or anything like that, a question that we get asked very often is about taxes and, you know, what should you do? Should you be doing your own taxes? Should you, you know, when should you get a GST number, or should you incorporate or be an LLC or anything like that? And the very simple answer I need to tell you right now is I am not the person to ask, okay? I personally failed accounting 3 times in university, so I am never the one to give you financial advice. So today we have Joanna with us to actually talk through taxes, self-employment, and all of that with you guys, because like I said, I'm not the one to be giving you the advice today. Joanna, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah. So I'm Joanna Sheff. I am the founder and partner of AccountWell Co. We're a small boutique accounting firm, and we specialize in working with small businesses, entrepreneurs, you know, creativepreneurs, whatever they call it. We just love working with small business owners. We are small business owners ourselves. We really just specialize working with people like Carly and probably most of her listeners.
Absolutely. And so that is a big reason as to why, you know, I gravitated towards you for accounting specifically, because I know looking at my friend group who are accountants for like the very like traditional accounting firms, you know, when I would be asking them like just casual questions, they wouldn't really know what was going on, because I think that, you know, the big accounting firms, you know, a lot of that is different than what I am personally doing. And sure. I love that you guys are a boutique agency, like specifically dedicated to creativepreneurs, because it honestly is a completely different world.
Yeah, for sure. And I just think too, small business owners just have very different needs than the bigger, exactly like you said, but then the bigger companies. And so sometimes a lot of things get missed, and, you know, even things like influencers and stuff, it's such a new industry, right? So it's not as cookie cutter as some of those bigger things going on. So they may not necessarily be in the know, and just working really closely with clients to understand their business and the specifics of it and stuff like that.
Absolutely. Okay. So let's dive right in. I'm going to share really quick with you guys who are listening about my situation with, you know, going out and hiring an accountant. Obviously, I already told you, it's because, for one, I really cannot do it on my own. Like, I feel like if I did try to file my own taxes, I would end up owing like $80,000 to the government or something like that. Like, it would just be ridiculous. So I don't do it. Now, another reason is because I feel like for me, and I also feel like for a lot of small business owners, you know, they don't know what they don't know. So like, I don't know what I can and can't write off. I don't know, like, if I didn't have an accountant, I wouldn't know what I like could and couldn't write out, like write off. I wouldn't know how to properly, you know, hire people in the business and then make sure it was all working correctly. It was literally just like me, myself, and I, which was really just the blind leading the blind, until I reached out to Joanna to take me on as a client. Because at the end of the day, I love working with you specifically because, you know, you do all of my bookkeeping, which is fantastic. And also, you're so responsive on all of my emails and all the stuff when I'm just like, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I have had so many questions to you, and you've been like, here's the answer. And I'm like, thank you so much. And I truly feel like you save my life like at least once a week. I feel like I'm always sending an email being like, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. So I'm very excited to have you, because I feel like a lot of people don't know, you know, even when to hire an accountant, you know, what exactly accountants can do for you as a small business owner. And I'm excited to dive into it. So with that being said, I actually would like to circle back to that question that I just said is, you know, for you personally, how do you work with small business owners, creativepreneurs? Like, what services do you currently offer?
Yep. So we offer 3 different types of services. So we have just the tax preparation. So if you kind of do your own bookkeeping, or you have someone else doing it, and you just want to come to us to file the taxes because that's the scary part for you, then we can just handle that. We also have just one-off advisory services. So we can typically set up, you know, a consultation on an hourly basis, and we can kind of address whatever situations you have, questions you have. So the most common one we get is a startup consultation. So a lot of people are starting up a business. They don't know what they need, what they can write off, when they should register for GST, all those questions to set themselves up. So we kind of do a 1 hour consultation where we walk through that. And then our most popular service is actually the monthly bookkeeping service. So it's a full service kind of all-inclusive package where we do your bookkeeping, we do your taxes, we do your GST, and we're kind of also just available for questions, you know, as you have them. So, you know, you're not going to get a invoice if you send us an email with a question, or we get off a phone call. So it's kind of just designed to be in a fixed fee, because, you know, in this day and age too, it also helps the clients know what to budget, right? Like if you know what you have to pay for your accounting and your taxes, it's easier than, you know, at the end of the year, you might just get this massive bill that's billed by the hour, and it could be, you know, you just have no idea. So that's kind of why we like the fixed fee, because we know what we're doing. We know what we're charging you. You know what to expect. And there's just no surprises. Yeah. So those are kind of the three main services. And you know, we love working one-on-one with really understanding, like, what is your business? What do you need? And, you know, depending on what needs you have on a monthly basis. Like some clients want a lot of reporting. They have payroll. Like it just kind of depends on what your business is. So we kind of quote that fee based on that.
So I absolutely agree on that. And that is why, that for me personally, for you guys listening, like that is what I have, is the bookkeeping, as well as, you know, the taxes at the beginning of the year and all of that. So they take care of that for me, because I just don't know how. But it makes my life very, very easy, and the workflow is fantastic. So I feel like we're only like a couple minutes in, and I'm just like, get an accountant, please. It'll save your life. But I would love to know, for people who are self-employed, what are just some quick and dirty just things that they need to know about their income? So a big question that I get all of the time is, how much, you know, of each paycheck, for example, what percentage of each paycheck should I be putting away for income taxes? You know, I would also love to discuss the difference between GST and income taxes, because something someone else, you know, brought up in a Clubhouse room the other day was about how, you know, should I start charging, you know, GST so I can put it away so I can pay my taxes? And I was like, income taxes and GST are not the same. So I would love to know just all the tea on it.
All the details. So we get that question very, very common, as well as, you know, if you're self-employed, what should you put aside for taxes and things like that? So if you're self-employed, as in you're running a sole proprietor, not a corporation, everything that you make essentially is income to you. So I always kind of recommend putting beside, you know, a minimum of 20%. And then obviously if you can, upping that to 25 or 30%, it's always better to have more money at the end of the year, you know, with a smaller tax bill than the other way around. We get a lot of tears from self-employed individuals during tax season. You know, I send them their tax return, and literally I've dealt with so many tears of just people being like, oh my God, I cannot believe I owe this much. So I always kind of say, like, at the minimum, if you can put aside 20%, that's awesome. If you can, you know, even if you can't put 20%, try putting 10%. You just have to remember that when you work for yourself, you, whatever you're making, that's before taxes. So when you work for someone else, they're already deducting taxes off your paycheck, right? So if you're making 50K a year, well, whatever you get in your hands, it's already been taxed. So you spend all of that, and then at the end of the year, you know, you don't have this big tax bill, or sometimes you even get a nice refund. But when you work for yourself, that's not the case. So it's always important that if you're making $500, that full $500 is not actually all yours. So just put at least 20% away, if not more. When you're self-employed, you also have to contribute to CPP. So that typically gets tapped onto your tax bill at the end of the year. So not just, so on top of the regular income tax, you're also paying for that. Really important, put that money aside. I guess we'll get into GST, because that's another big bill that if you're registered for GST, you get at the end of the year. So if you're registered for GST, that 5% you collect does not belong to you. You know, the CRA, their rule is actually take that 5% you collect, you're supposed to put it in like a trust account, and you're not supposed to touch it, and then you're supposed to pay it. Obviously, in practice, does nobody really does that, but you just need to remember that.
I was like, I don't think I have like a dedicated GST trust. Like I have.
Yeah, and honestly, most people don't. It's just that that's kind of the 5% that people kind of forget about. They're like, oh, I forgot that 5%, you know, they get paid on a $500 invoice and they get $525 and they just forget that $25 really doesn't belong to them, right? So when you're collecting GST, you're like an agent for the CRA. You're the middle person, you collect it for them and you remit it to them. So it doesn't belong to you. So they're actually, they're a lot more less lenient on GST balance owings just because it's truly not your money. But that's a bill that I find most self-employed people that are registered for GST do forget about.
Yeah, I, even you saying that right now, I'm like, oh my God. For me personally, like I take 30% out of everything that I make and I put it into like a savings account specifically mm-hmm. for that. So then from there, like I can, well, I also have to take out like a percentage to pay my manager on top of that. So like I make probably half of actually what I make.
Which is a great mindset because you don't actually make the full amount that you bring in. So if you're putting that aside, then you're in a great position.
I honestly like, it comes from the fear of me being that person during tax season who gets the bill and they're like, how am I going to pay this? Especially yeah. because this is the first year, or I guess 2020 was the first year I'd ever like made money from social media or been self-employed. So like this first tax season is the first time I've gone through it. And I'm just like, I recklessly made the mistake to put in my like income into like one of those calculators where it gives you just like a generic thing. I was like, this was a bad idea because now I'm stressed, but I don't think it'll be that bad. But I do put away 30% of what I make because, like I said, I'm terrified of owing like crazy amounts of money to the government and just not having yeah. it.
And I know it can be really hard sometimes when you're self-employed and you get that money in your bank account and it's hard to put that 30% aside. But honestly, if you don't, you just end up in this endless cycle of, you know, then you get this big tax bill on your first year of business and then you spend the whole first year trying to pay off that first bill and then second year rolls around and then you get another big tax bill and then you're running around trying to pay, you know what I mean? So it's just like this vicious cycle that you're just always going to be chasing your tail trying to pay off that next tax bill. So putting money aside is just, it's probably one of the most important things to do when you're self-employed.
Okay, I love that. That's like the one hard and fast rule that I have started to really follow because like I said, I'm terrified. I would love to know. So I feel like a lot of people, you know, they get their paychecks, they have their CPP deducted, their EI, their tax, like whatever their paycheck is what their paycheck is. Mm-hmm. And then from my understanding, you know, they get taxed as like employees. So I'm just kind of wondering, is there different tax rates for people who are traditionally employed versus people who are self-employed, like when it comes to income tax that we should know about?
So there's no different tax rates. It's the same for everyone. It's just that, so when you're actually self-employed, you don't have to contribute to EI. So at the end of the year, when you're doing your taxes, there is no EI taken off of it. So that's also why so you can choose to register with Service Canada to deduct EI if you want. But as a regular self-employed person, it doesn't automatically get calculated the way CPP does. So you can choose to. And that's important if you feel like, you know, you want that EI cushion if you ever lose your job or you lose your earning potential and things like that. So that's something to consider. But as a self-employed person, the only thing that doesn't get deducted is EI. But CPP and income tax, it's the same as if you were to work for someone else.
Oh, okay. So I didn't know that. So you can, you can optionally contribute to EI if you want.
Yep, you can optionally contribute to EI if you want. You don't have to. It's not automatic like CPP. The only thing that is slightly different, which I guess you can consider to be a bit higher of an expense if you're self-employed, is if when you work for someone else, there's a CPP, there's the employer portion. So the employer actually contributes a percentage to your CPP and then you contribute a percentage. But when you're self-employed, you're actually contributing the full amount. So for an example, the real numbers are 5.10% would be what the CPP that your employer would contribute, and then you contribute the other 5.10%. But when you're self-employed, you act as the employer and the employee. So you're actually contributing 10.2%.
Okay.
So it is, I guess you can say that part is a little bit higher when you're self-employed. But in terms of income tax, that's the same across the board.
Okay. Okay. Super interesting. We love to see it. So I also know something that you mentioned a little bit earlier in the episode was being a sole proprietorship versus being a corporation or mm-hmm. a partnership. Now, this is something that like gets my like little nerdy heart because I have a law minor. And so my emphasis is on contracts and partnerships. So like, I totally love the nerdy law behind like, what are corporations and a sole proprietorship and a partnership? However, I don't know anything about the difference, like when it comes to taxation, mm-hmm. because I feel like for me, like I know on paper, I know how it works. In practice, mm-hmm. I am not a corporation. So my business is not paying me out as an employee. Mm-hmm. So I would love to know, especially too, for the people who are listening, who are kind of confused, what the difference is, you know, tax and whether that be income tax wise or payment tax wise mm-hmm. or employee wise between yeah. sole proprietorship and a corporation or a partnership.
Yeah. So if you're a sole proprietor, then what that means is that in the eyes of the CRA and legally, you are your business. So, you know, your business might be your girl, Carly, but in the eyes of the CRA, your business is Carly. So you are your business, one and the same. So anything that you make, you're going to get taxed on that at the personal income tax rate. Everything that you make. When you're an incorporated business, you're a separate legal entity from the owner. So the corporation itself is its own legal entity. So corporations get taxed at a way better rate. So corporations only get taxed 11% versus when you're an individual, the lowest income tax bracket starts around 25%, right? So just that in itself, like if you're making a lot of money, obviously 11% versus 25% at the lowest rate is already a massive difference. So typically the biggest difference I would say is the tax rate. And then obviously the legal structure itself, right? It's two separate things. So if you're running a corporation, you can't use your corporate bank account like your own personal bank account. Any money moving in and out of the business, it has to be accounted for one way or the other. So it has to get accounted for either as a salary to yourself, a dividend to yourself. But you know, you can't take your bank card and go buy some clothes because you're going to get taxed on that. So that's the difference is there's really like a fine line, a separation there. And then when you are an incorporated business, you can kind of pay yourself two different ways. You can pay yourself a salary or you can pay yourself a dividend. So what that means is when you pay yourself a salary, it's kind of like your corporation is the employer, right? So they calculate they say, okay, Carly, you say, I run a corporation. I'm going to pay myself $50,000 a year. You do the deductions, you deduct CPP, EI, you remit it to the CRA, and then you pay Carly the net amount. Or you can pay yourself a dividend. So a dividend gets like taxed slightly lower up to a certain threshold. But when you pay yourself a dividend, it's again before tax. So if you pay yourself a $10,000 dividend, you'll have to put some money aside to account for taxes that you'll get taxed on that. But just kind of different ways to pay yourself.
This is obviously not applicable to us in Canada, but a lot of the people who I follow and are my followers are in the US. So they do a lot of like, I see a lot of Twitter debating about if people should become an LLC or if they should just like stay as a sole proprietorship or they should incorporate or do all these things. And, you know, yeah, I feel like everybody has questions regardless of like the country's tax structure yeah. and how it works. But people I find always are like, should I be a corporation? Should I be a sole proprietorship? I don't know.
Yeah,
and
so for sure. We get that question all the time as well.
Yeah. So yeah, I would love to know, like at what point do you kind of recommend people, or if there is any point of, you know, should you stay a sole proprietorship or should you incorporate?
Yeah. So from a purely like tax accounting standpoint, obviously for legal reasons, a lot of businesses, they just incorporate right off the bat because of liability purposes and things like that. They just incorporate, separate themselves from their personal stuff. So that's, I won't advise on that since I'm not a lawyer. But from an accounting tax standpoint, I always kind of say there's definitely some factors to consider. So if you make one of the biggest things I would say is running a corporation costs a lot more money, right? So tax filings are a lot more expensive. Like, you know, for example, a sole proprietor tax return goes anywhere from $300 to maybe $500 at the higher end, if you're all your bookkeeping is done. But a corporate tax filing can start anywhere from, you know, $900 at the very low end, upwards to $2,500 just for the tax filing. Mm-hmm. That doesn't include the bookkeeping. When you're incorporated, it's really important to have proper financial statements because you need that to file your tax returns. So, you know, using an Excel workbook, that doesn't really work anymore. So you have to kind of invest in whether it's accounting software or, you know, hiring an accountant becomes more of a, you know, more of a potentially necessity, unless you want to do it on your own, obviously. So running a corporation in general, it costs more money, right? You have to incorporate, you have to do annual returns, which is about like $100 to $80 a year to revive your corporation every year with the registry. And then again, the bookkeeping, tax filings, you know, if you pay yourself payroll and you're hiring someone to do that, that costs money. You have to issue yourself a T4 at the end of the year, T5. So that in general, just higher cost to run a corporation. The lower tax rate, this is kind of the biggest thing, is the lower tax rate, it only applies if you keep a good portion of that money in your company. So for example, if your corporation makes $100,000 a year, but you take out the full $100,000 because you need it to finance your personal life, you're going to get taxed the same way in your, as a personal, at the personal tax rate on that $100,000 as if you were a sole proprietor, right? But if you were to keep, let's say, $60,000 in the company and pay yourself $40,000, then you would get taxed as a individual on the 40% you take out, but the stuff you leave in, you only get taxed 11%. So that's where it's like, okay, there is tax savings because you are able to keep money in your business. So if you're running a business and you may make a lot of money, but you also spend a lot of money and you need a lot of money and you're using all of it anyway, maybe not super necessary to incorporate because you're paying higher, you know, higher fees to administer your corporation. And then on top of that, you're getting taxed the same. So there's no real tax savings. And does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It does. And I just find it so interesting because I do have a lot of friends who, you know, a friend of mine, like she's her only employee, but she's incorporated. And we were talking about this and it was so interesting because I was like, wow, like it's just you, but you chose to incorporate from day one. And so I think it's interesting because I can totally see it on one hand, how a lot of businesses will just do it because then the foundation is laid from the start. But I also see, I mean, for my job personally, and I think probably a lot of people that you come across, like, I don't think it makes a lot of sense for me to incorporate like off the bat because I mean, it's just me, myself, and I. Like, my business, I think, is like the epitome of a sole proprietorship because like my brand is me. And so it makes sense that to be a sole proprietorship. In the future, definitely, I think corporation is something I would look into, specifically because this is something I want to talk to you about, and it's employees and how that works with sole proprietorship and corporations. But it's just very interesting because I think a lot of people do see like the lesser taxation as an advantage, but you're completely right. It just comes with a totally different
model. I have a lot of clients that are like, you know, they run a corporation and, you know, they go through the whole year and they use their bank cards on the corporate bank card on, you know, the groceries or just things. They don't really think about it. And then they'll be like, oh, but I don't pay myself anything. I don't take anything out of the company. I don't pay myself. But not realizing that, you know, if you go to get groceries and you forgot and you use your, that is still you paying yourself one way or the other. So it's really important to, obviously there's a lot of things to consider. Like, you know, for some people, like they're like, no, I'm serious with this business. I want to set the foundation from the start, because sometimes it's not hard, but sometimes the transition can be annoying, right? Like if you have everything set up as a sole proprietor and then now you have to cancel all those accounts, you have to close all your CRA accounts, you have to close your bank accounts, and you have to go open new ones. So sometimes that transition itself can be annoying. So some people are like, yeah, I just want to start it from the beginning. Even if they're taking all the money out, it's fine. So there's a lot of factors to consider. I would just say a lot of times what I get a lot is clients that are like, oh, well, I've heard the tax rate's 11%, so I'm going to incorporate, but then not realizing that that's not always the case. But, you know, there's no rule of like, you have to make a certain amount or, you know, you have to keep a certain amount in your company to incorporate. But those are just things that, at least if you know, when you go into it knowing that, then you won't have any surprises.
Absolutely. And I think that is also a big reason why we hire accountants, because I mean, you don't want surprises. That's like the worst. Like I said, I would love to talk about employees, because this is a conversation that we had when, you know, like I said earlier too, like I feel like known at this point to send a lengthy email being like, hey, like, I actually don't know what I'm doing. This is the idea that I have. Sorry if I'm bugging you, but just let me know. And so employees was one of these, because I was like, I'm really overwhelmed with the podcast and with YouTube and all of this, and I would like to hire someone. But I was like, I also have never hired someone ever. So I was like, mm-hmm. I don't want to, you know, just be like, okay, I'm hiring you and I'm going to pay you and all of this. And I don't even know like how I would have done that. Mm-hmm. It just didn't make sense to me. So I was like, okay, I'm going to email you. And so I would love to talk about the difference of mm-hmm. employees when it comes to being a sole proprietorship or like an individual versus a corporation, because this is information that I had no idea about, of like how it was different and how it worked. So this is information that I think other people would find very valuable, because I have a lot of friends now who have been like, I'm looking to hire, I'm looking to do this. So I would love to learn more.
So first I'm going to caveat that any advice I'm giving, obviously in the general sense, but you know, things can be different specific to your tax situation. So always consult, you know, your own accountant or some accountant, you know, just to get proper advice for your own. Cause sometimes I don't want people to hear things and be like, oh, that's what she said. And it doesn't always apply to everyone. Right. Mm-hmm. But in terms of, where you can hire employees, whether you're a sole proprietor or a incorporated business. So if, you know, you as self-employed sole proprietor, you want to hire employees, typically you just have to open a payroll account with a CRA. And then same thing, you just have to, you know, whether you do it yourself or you hire your accountant to do it, but they'll essentially just help you process the payroll. So what that means is you hire your employee, you have to get the proper forms filled out. And then, you know, as the employer, you'll have to properly calculate the deductions on your employee's pay. So whether you're paying them salary or by the hour, you know, or you pay them monthly or semi-monthly, you just have to calculate the deductions, CPP, the EI, the income tax, you calculate that stuff, you pay your employee after those deductions, and then you remit the deductions to the CRA. So that's going to be the same whether you're a sole proprietor or a corporation. So there's no real differences there. Now, obviously, there's a lot of, you know, you can either hire an employee or a contractor. So that's kind of where there's a lot of gray area. And this is kind of the area too where I say, like, if you're considering hiring an employee or a contractor, definitely consult with your accountant or a professional so that they can help you assess whether the person you're hiring is an employee or a contractor. Now, obviously, a lot of people, they like to hire contractors because as the employer, you don't have to pay their portion of CPP or EI. Like I was saying before, as the employer, you have to pay a portion of the EI and CPP. So now if Carly, if you're the business owner and you're hiring an employee, you're going to have, not only are you paying, you know, their base wage, whether it's hourly or salary, but you also have to pay their portion of CPP and EI. So that's like an extra cost to you as the employer. So a lot of people, they opt to hire contractors, because if you hire a contractor, you don't have to pay that stuff because they're not your employee. Mm-hmm. But there are rules. The CRA does have rules around what constitutes an employee versus a contractor, right? So I've also seen a lot of audits where people just pay everyone, like a business will pay everyone as a contractor because it's the more cost-effective route. But the CRA does do audits on that stuff. And, you know, if they do determine that the person you're hiring doesn't meet the definition of an employee, then they will make you back pay all the CPP and EI. And I've actually seen them basically make you back pay your portion and the employee's portion. So that's something else to consider, is you really just have to make sure that the people you're hiring meets the definition of a contractor or an employee.
Yeah. So that is something that was so crazy to me that I learned when I reached out to you about hiring, because I just thought you just hired them and you paid them and that was it. But when I was hiring and like going through the process, something that I think we talked about as well was them being a contractor in the true sense of the word, meaning that like I was not their only employer.
Yeah. So there's a few different rules that constitute that, but so go on.
Yeah. So basically when I was hiring, I had to ask them, you know, like, are you employed, you know, traditionally, or are you self-employed and you have like other people that you're working for? Because I think what you said is that if I'm their only, you know, source of income, it makes them my employee.
I would say that is one of the factors they consider. So I'll kind of go on the past of like what I've seen through some of these audits is they'll ask a series of questions. I actually had one client that got audited and the CRA called the contractor at the time and just said, and asked them a series of questions that were very straightforward questions, but aligned kind of with their rules. So they'll be like, oh, so does Carly set your hours? Does she tell you have to come in, you know, from 8 to 5, do you work under her supervision? Do you use your own equipment? Like they'll ask very straightforward questions like that, but those are kind of aligned with what their rules are. And so one of the factors that they use to assess, like when you look at their rules, it doesn't say if you work for someone else, that means that you can be a contractor. Because if you don't meet all the other rules, you could still lose out on that argument with the CRA, and they'll consider you not a contractor, even if you have another job. But in some of the cases I've seen, is they'll use that as one of the factors to consider. Like, they'll be like, okay, you know, this person uses their own computer, they work on their own time, they have independence, they have control over their work, and they also have multiple jobs. Like, so that's one factor that they consider, but it's not like a hard, fast rule that if you have other employees or other employers that, you know, you're considered an employee. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, that absolutely does make sense. And it's something that I didn't know before, because for me, I had worked as a contractor, but I was also working different jobs and whatnot at the time. And it's funny now that you are talking about like set hours and stuff, because now I look back and I'm like, oh, like they did set my hours. Like, I technically was an employee, but they were paying me as a contractor. So, I mean, that was years ago. I can't really reconcile with that now. But
and they look at all the factors and they put it together, and then they kind of build their case to be like, and sometimes too, it could be that, you know, they do set your hours, but then, you know, there's a bunch of other factors to consider. And it's like, okay, well, actually, no, that person's kind of a contractor. So when it comes to employer contractor, it's a very, I would say, like, really, you have to consider the situation based on your very personal scenario or your company scenario. It's a very hard place for me to be like, these are the rules, because it's very gray in a sense. But for sure.
Are there any kind of like best practices that people can be doing to kind of align the most when they are looking to hire contractors? I know you literally just said it's like kind of a gray area, but is there, you know, something that you brought up is like, are they using their own equipment? Are they setting their own hours? Yeah. Are you setting their own hours? Yeah. Like,
so those rules that I've mentioned are all kind of aligned with what the criteria that they say on the criteria. When you read their website, obviously it doesn't sound like it's English. It's just like, what are they saying? But in plain language, it's kind of like, you know, independence, you know, control, use of equipment and things like that. So I think in this day and age too, it just depends. Like, if it depends on what kind of business I'm looking at, but like, okay, if you work at a retail store, for example, and you hire an employee, if you own a retail store and you hire an employee and they're there, you know, 5 days a week working, you set the hours and they're like, to argue that person's a contractor may be difficult depending on the situation. It could be a seasonal employee, like, again, very gray situations, but in that kind of a scenario, probably more of an employee. In our day and age, you know, with what you do and things like that, like if you were to hire like a virtual assistant, right? Like it's very arguable that person is very much an independent contractor because they have their own computer, they work remotely, you know, they set their own hours. And so in that type of that line of work, like it's not hard to argue, like those people probably very much will be independent contractors, right? If you hire someone that, you know, comes to your specific office 5 days a week or in the times that you set, you know, and they use your, like, I literally had a client that, the same client I was telling you before, the CRA called the contractor and was like, do you use your own computer? Like, do you use your own phone or do you use the work phone there? Like, they asked stuff like that to build their case in a sense. So I think, again, really depends on the scenario. But if we're just talking about like if I'm just thinking about your business, like if you're hiring like an assistant and it's like a virtual assistant that's, you know, working from home and using their own material equipment and things like that, and you just tell them what you kind of need done and they do it within their own hours, I would say that to me, that's arguably very much an independent contractor. And then best practices would be like, always have an invoice, right? So if you're paying a contractor, I always say get an invoice before you even pay them. Right. So a lot of times, because if you hire these independent contractors to do one-off jobs, like they may not want to send you an invoice because they're probably not planning to claim taxes on it. Right. So I always kind of say you always get an invoice from your contractors. They should send you an invoice that outlines properly what services and things like that. And then you send them payment. That's probably one of the biggest best practices is having that invoice to, you know, prove that you've paid this person. This is your invoice. It's kind of really just for the CRA to prevent under the table, right?
Yeah.
Because they don't want you to be able to deduct it as business expense, but then on the other side, no one's claiming it as income.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that does make a lot of sense. And so my final question about independent contractors and sole proprietorships and employees is, can you, as a sole proprietorship, have employees, or do you have to be incorporated to hire like an employee in like an actual employee, like in the eyes of the CRA capacity? Yeah,
no, you can be operating a sole proprietor business as long as you have a business number with a CRA. You just register for a payroll account. So that's kind of the same thing as your GST account. It's just a different account. It's called a payroll account, and then you can pay your employees. So you don't have to be incorporated to hire employees at all.
Okay, cool. I feel like that was more of a clarifying question for me, because I was just like, I don't know the difference. Like in my head, I was like, you have to be a corporation to like employ people, but apparently not.
So you have to be a corporation to pay yourself a salary on payroll. That's maybe where the confusion might be. Like you can't set up a payroll account to then process payroll on your own money, because it doesn't really make sense, right? Because it's just like anything that you're making, you're going to get taxed on anyway. So then if you like set up a payroll account and then you're like, oh, I'm going to pay myself, you know, 50,000 from the money that I'm making, like that doesn't make sense. But definitely as a sole proprietor, you can have other employees.
Okay, yeah. Cool. We love to see it. So then I feel like that answered a lot of employment questions. And obviously, like we've already said, this is not like personalized business advice. This is just a general conversation about topics that I've had questions about and you guys have also had questions about. So please, you know, don't take this as truth and gospel, like consult your accountants. I wanted to have an open and honest conversation about all of this kind of stuff, because I'm also learning as I am going. And so the second thing, or I guess this is, we've talked about a bunch of things, but something that you did mention was expenses. And I think that expenses is really the thing that people are confused about, because on one hand, I feel like I'm like, okay, well, I know I can expense like a portion of my rent and a portion of my utilities and like inventory and things that are very like business. But then I talk to other people and they're like, oh yeah, well, I'm, you know, expensing this. And I'm like, you can expense that? And so I think expenses are.
Oh yeah, I get that a lot.
So I would love to talk about expenses and how they work, what they are, just like all of it.
So the general rule with the CRA is that you can deduct any reasonable expense that you incurred to run your business. So it might not be an expense that's necessarily listed on their business, on their website. Like it might not clearly say this expense, but if you truly incurred that expense to run your business, you can deduct it if it's reasonable. So, you know, obviously the very common things would be like advertising, meals, supplies for your businesses, paying contractors. You know, nowadays there's a lot of payment processing fees. Like if you're using Square and Stripe, like all that stuff's deductible, of course, because it's a cost to run your business. You know, things that I get a lot that are absolutely not deductible is, you know, so meals and entertainment. That's a fun one, because, you know, everyone seems to have a different opinion, not an opinion, but a different take on what that means. Meals and entertainment is, you know, purely meals if you're out having a business lunch or you're meeting a client, or, you know, it doesn't mean, well, I'm working, so I'm going to go get lunch, but I was working. That's not deductible. And another one that we get a lot too is like clothes. Like people think, oh, I can deduct clothes. Like I have to go for business meetings. Well, everyone has to wear clothes, right? So the CRA doesn't let you, because you're a business owner, that you get to deduct clothes, right? Because then how is that fair to Joe Blow that works a 9-to-5? I mean, he has to buy clothes. Uh-huh. So clothes is not deductible. And I get that a lot, because, you know, whether you wear a $5 shirt or a $500 shirt, like why would you get to deduct that, right? So that's a big one. And I think especially now in a lot of, I think especially specific to your industry, you know, influencers and things like that. Obviously, you guys have to look good and dress up a lot, but that doesn't mean that you can deduct that clothes, right? And so I think that's really important. I get that a lot, actually, surprisingly. They're like, oh, I have to go for a business meeting, so I have to wear nice clothes, or I have to wear specific Lululemons because, you know, I work in this field. So that's not deductible. But in general, I mean, there's no like it's hard to say. Really, that's just the general rule, is anything you incur to run your business, you can deduct. So home office, we can talk about that one. That's a gray area one. So you are allowed to deduct the portion of your house that you use specifically for business. So that means that you can't deduct your kitchen because some people are like, well, I sit in my kitchen island to do work. It has to be like, okay, I live in a 1400 square foot house or condo, and my office is 200 square feet, you know, so that's the specific area that I use to do my business. And then whatever that percentage is, so let's say 200 divided by 1400, that percentage, you multiply that by your home office expenses and you can deduct that portion. So what that means is then a lot of people are like, oh, well, I renovated my backyard, so I can deduct 20% of that. No, it has to be specific to your office. So obviously things like internet, right? Like that's a very fair home office expense that you pay for your home, but you're using for business. And so home office is too an area where, you know, if your percentage starts hitting like 80%, like, you know, if you're claiming 80% of your home office expenses, you're probably, if you ever got audited, you definitely get slammed for that. Cause you know, they're not going to allow you to deduct 80% of your home expenses.
Yeah. But yeah,
you can deduct rent. You can deduct, you know, condo fees. If you pay condo fees, a portion of that, you can deduct the interest on your mortgage, but you can't deduct the principal of your mortgage. So just the interest portion. Yeah. And then like utilities, obviously, you know, heating, those are all fair things. If you're doing like a renovation to your office space, you can deduct a portion of that, but you can't deduct a renovation to your kitchen. So that's kind of where they always emphasize the word reasonable, is like your expenses have to be reasonable. But so home office is a big one, and then vehicle expense as well. So if you're specifically, you know, if you drive a lot to meet clients and things like that, the CRA allows you to deduct a portion of your vehicle expenses. So if you're driving your personal car for your business, you're allowed to deduct a portion of, you know, your oil changes, your gas, your business registration for your car, things like that. And so they require that you keep like a log. So there's a lot of apps nowadays where you can get in the car, hit the button, and then, you know, when you get there, you turn it off and it'll track all your business mileage divided by your total mileage you drove. And then that's the percentage that you can deduct on your vehicle expenses. So that's how those two are probably the most, I guess, confusing areas, but.
Yeah. I find it every time somebody talks about expenses, I find it so interesting because then my mind runs like to all of the different types of jobs. And so, for example, one that I was like, my brain was cooking up while you were talking, it was about how you said, you know, for me personally, like I live in a 2-bedroom apartment, but I live here by myself. So my second bedroom is the office. So mm-hmm. I would be able to deduct the percentage of however big my office is versus the size of my apartment.
Yep.
And I was like, what if, you know, for example, like you're a YouTuber, but you're a cooking channel. Like is your office the kitchen? Like there's just so many things where my mind just like runs with it. And I'm like, yeah. It.
Yeah. So I would say like, that's a very fair point. And I think like in this day and age with all the new businesses that are starting, like it's even like gray for me, right? Like there's a lot of things that, yeah, I've actually, as a great example, I've never seen a case of, yeah, if you're a food blogger and you use your kitchen, technically you're using that for business. But I would just say if you're deducting it reasonably and you can defend it to the CRA and you can show proof that you know what I mean? Then I think, and again, with the CRA, you never know, right? Like I've actually had clients that deduct business parking expenses. And sometimes one time I've actually seen the CRA be like, nope, you don't have, their exact words were, you don't have a meeting agenda for those meetings where you parked, so you can't deduct that. So at the end of the day, even me as an accountant, like I, you know what I mean? Like if you get audited and the CRA goes through all of your receipts and they might say, that's not reasonable. Look, we're at the mercy of them, right? But yeah. If you're reasonable and you can argue it, maybe the worst case scenario is they don't allow it. But I just kind of say, like, be reasonable. Like, don't try to deduct 80% of your house and, like, all these expenses that don't make sense because you're likely going to get flagged to begin with. And then once you get audited, who knows what happens.
Yeah. Something also that in my brief Googling about expenses before I really actually was even in a position to expense anything. Something that I also wanted to kind of run it back to was in the influencer industry, I have been, you know, a lot of people are asking questions about, can I expense this outfit that I got to shoot for Instagram or YouTube, or like I bought this stuff for a haul, can I do this or XYZ, or things like I went and I got a facial because I'm an on-air news personality. That also is one that I've seen a lot of controversy about. Cause like from my understanding, I think that when you are one of those people, you can expense that kind of stuff.
Yeah. See that, I think that's just where it's difficult is like, you know, the series website doesn't really tell you like, oh, like this is, you know, if you get facials because you are an on-air person that you're allowed that. So, I mean, I don't know. I'd actually be curious, like if the CRA were to review that, what they would say, but I, like, if I look at it, I would just kind of say, well, I talk to clients too. So I should get a facial so that my face looks good. Like, you know what I mean? So I think that's just kind of where, if you just think about, like, it's even like the example that you mentioned about if you're an Instagram person and you have to buy an outfit to shoot for an ad campaign. I think that's probably reasonable. Like, if you got paid by a company to do a promotional post and you had to buy an outfit, that might be reasonable. I honestly don't really know what their stance is on that. But I think that's reasonable. Like, if that's your line of business and you had to buy an outfit, do a promotional post, you know, I think that's reasonable to get. You have to get a facial. That, I don't know, that might be straddling the line. but again, right, like, this is, these are all very new industries, and there's probably not a lot of precedence even in terms of businesses in the past that have gotten audited and what the result was, but I'd actually be really curious to know that myself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think about that all the time, because, you know, there's so many different types of influencers who are, you know, big influencers, but they are in very niche things. Like, I guess makeup isn't really that niche, but it's just like, you know, if you're a makeup YouTuber and you have like a million subscribers and it is your full-time job and you're, you know, as influencers, we get a lot of PR. So I think that kind of is what negates like a lot of people from claiming clothes and stuff that mm-hmm. they buy anyways, because it truly does kind of balance out. But mm-hmm. if you're buying all of it, like, and it's for your YouTube channel where you're a makeup influencer, it's like, in my head, at the simplest level, that does make sense as a business expense. But mm-hmm. like you said, like, there's no precedence.
Yeah, exactly.
Really on audits of influencers, because it's such a new...
And maybe their argument would be, you know, and maybe their argument would be kind of, okay, well, if you buy makeup, what's the portion you use for business? Are you using it just for your channel? Or are you also using it for, you know, so maybe it's a matter of like, okay, you can't deduct the whole thing, but you can deduct a portion. So yeah, I'd actually be really interested to know. And I don't know any influencer clients that have ever been audited. So I don't know, mm-hmm. you know, what's come out of some of those expenses. But that, yeah, I think it's even for the CRA, I'm sure for them, there's a lot of gray too. And honestly, it depends on who you get. Like, sometimes you get a really nice agent, you know, that's not, and sometimes you get one that's just like, no, like, you know, business parking, you don't have an agenda for that meeting. No, not deductible. That really shocked me, but, so you never know.
It's so crazy. It's so crazy that it's kind of like in the hands of whoever your auditor is.
It really is. Yeah.
Something else about expenses. So I'm sure that you've probably noticed from me at this point, I really think I just put all of my receipts that I am doing anything related to business into mm-hmm. my little receipt app.
You know, I feel like a lot of the time it's because I don't know what actually is expendable and what is not. So is everything that I'm like, you know, in any type of situation, this is not even just a me thing, but like, let's say you put something on there. For example, like, I did a DIY rolling pantry for a YouTube video. So mm-hmm. I went and I bought the wood and I bought the paint and I bought the screws. It's a dedicated YouTube video. Am mm-hmm. I a carpenter? No. But I'm like, I did this for my job. So I think it's expendable, or I can expend it. But then a lot of the time I just don't know. So I'm sure you've noticed, I just scan in almost all of my receipts.
Well, I approach it with my clients, and obviously every accountant is different. Like, some might just be like, oh, if you put it in there, then we're going to process it and we're not going to ask questions. Obviously for me, if I see things that I'm like, okay, hey, like, I saw a lot of these, I saw you submit a bunch of clothes receipts, it's not really deductible. And then sometimes clients will be like, oh, well, you know, I bought it for this specific video that I had to do. So I always, if I see something that I'm like, okay, this is kind of, you know, not deductible or it's too much, I always kind of touch base with my client to be like, just to let them know what is and what's not deductible. And then some clients are like, oh, I don't care, I'm deducting it anyway. Some clients are like, oh, okay, I didn't know that. So I mean, for me, I definitely, the way I approach with my clients is if I see something funny or wrong, or I always let you know. But obviously I can't say the same for every accountant.
Yeah.
But I mean, in your case, like what you just explained, like, to me, yeah, that sounds fair. Right? Like, you had to buy that stuff to make a video to generate revenue. So I think that's fair.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because I feel like a lot of the time, mm-hmm. I whenever I'm doing anything business, I will just scan in my receipts and I'll just be like, we'll see. And then, you know, at the end of the month, I always get like a spreadsheet and you're like, what was this for? And I was like, you know what? This was scanning it in and just being like, I have no idea. So that is something that I appreciate, because like I said, I am obviously not an accountant. So I just put it in and I just wait for somebody to be like, this is wrong and this is right. And then that's it. So some of my kind of last questions really revolve around filing taxes. So something that I don't necessarily even, I think, know the answer to is when you are a sole proprietorship, you know, do you file your business taxes and then your income taxes separately, or are they not business? Like, do you have to file your individual ones and your business ones, or your sole proprietorship? Like, your tax.
That's a great question, and we get that a lot too. So it's very common. When you're a sole proprietor, your tax return is your personal tax return. So it's essentially just your personal tax return, and then there's an additional schedule in that tax return that you fill out with all your business income and expense information. So it's the same filing. It's the same filing. There's not like two separate ones. It's the same personal tax return that you file that's due on April 30th.
Okay, cool. And so that kind of answered my next question is, I know that business deadlines and stuff like that, I think, are a little bit different.
Yeah. So like taxes. The personal tax deadline is April 30th. And then if you're a sole proprietor, you have till June 15th. Last year it was obviously extended because of COVID. I haven't heard anything about extensions this year, so I'm not sure. If you're a corporation, you have very different deadlines because you can choose your fiscal year. So you don't necessarily have to have a January to December year. You can have an October to September year, or, you know, you can have a March to April year. So you can choose any 12-month period to be your fiscal year, essentially. Whereas if you're a sole proprietor, it's typically just the January to December. So if you're a corporation, then your tax deadlines will just vary depending on what you chose your fiscal year to be.
Okay, interesting. See, I didn't know that. I thought it was all just January to December, this is the year.
That's for sole proprietors. Yeah.
But for corporations, you just choose your fiscal year. That's very interesting.
Something too that I meant to ask when we were talking about GST is, we did talk about how you get a bill for your GST that you have to remit.
Mm-hmm.
I've come across other people who remit them like quarterly or stuff like that. I've also seen, I have a lot of friends who also do OnlyFans. And mm-hmm. so people like to be like on their case about not paying their taxes, which is so funny because I actually don't know a single person who has OnlyFans that doesn't pay their taxes. But a lot of them talk about how they, you know, pay their taxes quarterly or their GST potentially quarterly. Like, I mean, I think they just use the word taxes and they mean something else. This is just what I see on the internet. But is that a thing we can be doing, like remitting our GST?
Yep. So, I mean, typically when you register, depending on your revenue, the CRA will, so you can choose for the most part, like if you want to be a monthly remitter, a quarterly remitter, or an annual, you know, if you want to file GST annually, a lot of times if your revenue is over a certain threshold, the CRA will tell you, okay, you have to file quarterly or yearly. And then, so filing is one thing, but then paying installments is also a separate thing. So if you, so specific to GST, if your net amount owing on GST is more than 3,000, then you're required to make installment payments. So what that means is you don't have to file quarterly, but they make you pay what that balance owing is throughout the year quarterly. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So for example, if you owe $5,000 this year on your GST, then you've passed the threshold of 3,000. So you have to pay installments quarterly for the next year coming up. So it's almost like you're prepaying next year's. And then they just base it off of last year. So you just take 5,000, you divide it by four, and then you have to make those installment payments throughout the year. But it's like a prepayment for your next year's balance owing.
Okay. Yeah. That's very interesting too, because I did work for a company where my manager literally just casually mentioned to someone who wasn't even me, I was just in the room, about, you know, how they had to get their stuff together to file their GST. And I was like, what?
Yeah, so some people do file quarterly, like they have to actually remit a GST filing every quarter, but then that's different than paying installments. Installments is essentially prepayments for the year coming up. So for example, like next year, like this year, let's say we do your GST and let's say you owe 5,000. So you pay that 5,000, but then because you made more, you owed more than 3,000, they're going to make you prepay next year's. And how they base the calculation is they just take what you owe this year, they divide it roughly by four, and then you have to make those payments quarterly for the next year. And then if your next year is more than 5,000, then you have to pay the additional. If it's less, then you can either roll it to the next year or you can try to get that money back from the Series A.
Yeah. Yeah. That absolutely does make sense. So we talked about installments for GST. I'm also wondering, do they, because I've had to do this once where I actually owed taxes because I had made like a certain amount. Like I used to do a lot of experiential marketing stuff where they would pay me as a sole proprietorship. And then I also had a job, or not a sole proprietorship, an independent contractor. And then I also had a job where I was an independent contractor, but I didn't really understand how any of that worked. So they just paid me my full paycheck, didn't do any deductions type of thing. So I had to pay taxes that year. And so from my understanding, when you're self-employed and you get that XYZ amount of money that you have to pay back to the government, you can go on installment payments for paying back your taxes.
Yeah. I mean, not to pay back. So the installment payments is more a prepayment for the next year. So if you make, even for your personal taxes or even for corporations, if you have a certain amount of taxes owing at the end of the year, because for an example, let's say you run a corporation or even a sole proprietor, but at the end of the year, you owe like $300 because you don't make that much money. And so at the end of the year, you owe like $300. They're not going to make you do an installment payment. It's more for when you have like a large balance owing. Then what they do is they make you prepay for the year ahead. Now, in terms of repaying your balance in installments, like let's say you owe $10,000 and you can't pay it off in one shot and you want to make installment payments on that, you have to talk to them about coming up with a plan for that. I mean, as far as they're concerned, they expect the full amount. And then they're going to charge you interest and penalties on that balance owing. But sometimes what I've seen is, like, let's say clients that are like, they have like a $15,000, you know, GST balance owing for several years. You can come up with a payment plan with a CRA, depending on your specific situation. You can call them, come up with a payment plan to make payments towards your past debt. So I guess the word installment can kind of be confusing because when the CRA says installment, they mean like paying for the year in advance. So you're paying for next year's balance. But if you want to come up with a payment plan for past debt owing, that's slightly different.
Okay. Yeah. I think, definitely the word installment I'm realizing is tricky.
Yeah. The way they use it is like installments for the year coming up. So they'll tell you, okay, you owe installments. So when you're making those payments, you're kind of prepaying for the next year, which is also nice because then that way at the end of the year, if you've already put money, if you already paid them throughout the year, then it's kind of like putting into a savings account, right? But this way, you know, it's already with them.
Yeah. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Before we go, I would love to, if you just have any other just tips and tricks or just like information you would like to share, like, I don't even know the right question to ask right now, but if you have anything off of the top of your head that you would like to share with the audience, I would love to hear that right now.
I mean, I guess what one thing we can talk about that we didn't really cover, maybe most people maybe know, but just in general, how GST works. How GST works is you collect 5% from your clients, customers, and then anything you pay GST on, you can reduce that amount, and then you only owe the government net. So an example in numbers, let's say throughout the year you collected $5,000 of GST from your clients, but you paid, let's say, $3,000 worth of GST in all of your expenses, you only actually have to pay the government $2,000. So a lot of times in businesses that have a lot of expenses, so let's say like a retail store, right? They might collect $5,000 of GST, but they buy a lot of stuff, they pay a lot of GST. So sometimes they actually get a nice refund from the government. So that's kind of how GST works. It's the 5% that you collect less anything that you buy that you pay GST on. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. That totally does make sense. That's very interesting.
That's kind of where, like tracking your expenses is also super important because then, you know, you also get to reduce your GST bill if you're properly tracking GST on the stuff you're paying. So I say that more for people that are doing it themselves or using Excel or things like that. Like sometimes, you know, if you forget that portion of the GST, then you might be losing out on some money there.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. That makes a lot of sense. And then I guess also we're on the topic of sales tax. Something that I've been seeing is obviously like we're in Alberta, so we charge GST if you're... Oh, I think we actually also just forgot to say this. When do you need a GST number?
So you're required to have a GST number when you make over $30,000 a year, but obviously you can always voluntarily register. Like if you start your business, you can always choose to register right away. That way you're just like, okay, I know I'm going to make 30,000. Or another reason people voluntarily register before they make 30,000 is in that same scenario where if you buy a lot of stuff, you can get a refund, right? So sometimes people register for that reason. But like when you're required is when you surpass $30,000 of sales.
That is like, that's why I got my GST number. But something also too that I'm sure you've seen just in the back end of like all the things is that for us, like in Alberta, we're required to do GST, but I know in other provinces, there's, you know, like QST or PST, I think those are right. And companies will make me charge them GST in my province and then also PST or QST or wherever they're located also on their invoice. Do I have a responsibility of remitting that tax that I don't, in a province I don't even live in?
So I would say, okay, so this is a very, very tricky subject. So I won't get too deep into it. But what I'll say is, what's kind of weird that they're making you charge that. So that, I mean, maybe we'll take offline and look into it. But what I'll say is, for example, the rule, so there's four specific provinces. So BC has their own sales tax program. Manitoba has their own sales tax program. Saskatchewan has their own sales tax program, and Quebec has their own sales tax program. All the other provinces, they're either on GST or HST. So any provinces that are on GST, HST, they're administered through CRA. So it's all filed with the CRA on your same GST filing number. On the, all the other provinces, they have their separate programs. So let's say, for example, in BC, BC has specific rules on when a business has to apply for a PST number. So if, let's say you're one of those businesses that are required, because some businesses aren't. For example, just a really easy example, in BC, they don't charge sales tax on any food for consumption. So if you are in the business of selling food, you don't have to charge BC PST, no matter if you're a BC resident or a non-BC resident. Mm-hmm. But obviously that's where it gets very complicated, so I won't get into it. But let's say you are required to charge BC PST, you have to register for a BC PST number and track that, collect that, and then you have to file separately with them. It's the same thing for Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and Quebec. They all have their own separate rules as to when a business has to charge their specific sales tax, and then you have to register. Like some provinces say, oh, if you're a small supplier, so if you make less than 10,000, you don't have to register. Some don't have that rule. So if as soon as you make a sale in that province, you have to register. So all the provinces are very different. So you kind of have to, again, consult your accountant on your specific situation and then whether you're required to register in those provinces. But again, those four provinces have their separate sales tax program on top of the GST. So GST is the federal one that everyone has to kind of collect if they meet the requirements. And then those four provinces have their own rules on top of that. So obviously in Alberta, we're lucky because we don't have provincial sales tax. Mm-hmm. So we just have GST. In Ontario, for example, they charge HST, which is essentially their provincial sales tax plus GST, but it's harmonized with the CRA. So that's why they call it HST. And then you just, for ease of for business owners and things like that, they administer under one program. But then the other four provinces is a bit difficult because they administer it separately.
Yeah.
So that is a very complex topic.
Yeah, because I remember basically I had a company that was like, I send them my invoice, put my GST, which is normal. Like I charge GST on all of my invoices. Mm-hmm. And they came back to me and they're like, oh, you need to charge HST and we need your HST number. And I was like, I don't think that's right. Cause like, yeah. I don't do business out of Ontario. Like I, from my understanding, I only need to charge them GST because in Alberta, we don't have provincial sales tax, provincial sales tax. And so that was really interesting to go back.
Those are things where it also depends on the business and things like that. Like, for example, for me, I charge as a service business, I only charge 5%, no matter whether my client's in Alberta or on Ontario. Like, I don't charge HST on my services. Uh-huh. So that's just cool. But yeah, so that is a complex, but I mean, obviously for your specific business, we can always discuss that. To make sure, but
yeah, for sure. I just thought I would bring it up because it was so interesting. Eventually, so Kaylee just went back and forth with them and was basically like, in the contract, it says nothing about this. So like, I don't know why we have to charge you both HST and GST, because like, I mean, they had to pay it. It's not even like I was paying it, but
you're offering them a service, right? Not a product.
Yeah.
A service. Yeah. I'm pretty like, I mean, again, I'm going to look into your specific scenario. But for me, I know as a service business, you only have to charge 5% GST. It gets slightly complicated when products are involved, because there's some rules with like, okay, if you're delivering a product to a specific province, then you have to charge that province's tax rate. But for a service basis, business, I'm 99% sure that you're not required to.
Okay, yeah. And that's kind of what I thought. So basically, in the resolve, I really only had to pay the 5%, but it was just something that we came across recently. And I was like, huh, this is so interesting. So I thought I would.
Very fair.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for sitting down with me. I know that the beginning of the year is such a busy time for everyone in the accounting and financial profession. So thank you so much for sitting down and reporting.
Of course.
Before you go, I would love for you to share with everybody, you know, where they can find you, how they can reach out, you know, find you on social, all of that.
Yep. So our Instagram handle is just AccountWellCo. And then our website's www.accountwellco.com. If you want to reach out, you just, there's a contact form there. I can also be emailed directly at hello@accountwellco.com. But yeah, feel free to reach out.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you so much. I very much so appreciate this. I feel like this was kind of a selfish episode for me to ask a bunch of questions, but I'm sure it helped so many other people too.
That is it for today's episode. I really hope you guys enjoyed it. If you did, make sure to screenshot this episode and share it over on Instagram and tag me at Hey Bitches Podcast. I would absolutely love to chat shit with you guys in the DMs about today's episode. Before you go, make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you are an Apple Podcast listener, make sure to give the show a 5-star rating and review. It really does help me out and I would really appreciate it. I love you guys so much. I hope you guys have an incredible day. And for now, bye-bye, bitch.